Hey, Bankless Nation, happy State of the Nation. This is an episode where David do a deep dive on a topic that's been making headlines recently. David, I feel like we are on a redemption arc today because we are notoriously not into sports. At least we haven't provided good sports coverage on Bankless in the past. But today we are talking all about sports and the blockchain, sports and crypto.
I can get behind that.
At least I can get behind 50% of this, but we know there are a ton of sports fans in the Bankless community. How do we know? Because you've pointed out our mistakes, yes. And you've told us. This is an episode on the future of on-chain sports with, I think, an organization and a project that is doing more in crypto sports than anyone else. These are the folks behind sports. So Rare. They started with football in the EU. And there'd be soccer for us Americans, and have since expanded, and this is recent news, to the NBA. Mm-hmm. This is a recent announcement from them, also to Major League Baseball. So David, what are we going to be talking about today?
I think this is going to be part of the overarching story, also timely with the whole Reddit phenomenon, where Reddit put like NFTs into 3 million people's hands. How did they do that? And so it's a story, I think, of Ethereum, of blockchains, layer twos, NFTs, finding their ways into communities that are like outside of crypto Twitter, outside of just like these deep NFT degen communities, and are more mainstream, right? Sports are mainstream. And so Rare unquestionably has discovered product market fit at the intersection of sports and crypto, which seems like, at, you know, a cursory glance, a weird intersection, right? Sports, crypto, what does this have to do with each other? And so we're going to answer this question as to why So Rare has found product market fit here in the intersection of the nerds and the jocks, if you will, and like what it really takes. What's the secret sauce behind these things? And what lessons can we pull away from the product market fit that So Rare has seen?
We usually do disclosures at this point in the episode. Disclosure. There are no disclosures.
No disclosures.
David nor myself own any equity or tokens in a So Rare.
Although or So
David,
Rare cards. I don't even own a So Rare fantasy card. Yeah.
There's a sad story behind that that I was actually offered the opportunity to be an angel investor in So Rare. And guess what? I turned it down because sports. I didn't know enough about sports. So my sports, you know, lack of knowledge, ignorance has hurt me a lot over the years, apparently, as well. David, before we get into this episode, let's give a shout out to our friends and sponsors over at Push. This is a super neat protocol. It gives you on-chain notifications. David, I'm showing the interface. What sort of things can you use Push for?
Just to get notified of stuff going on Ethereum, on the world of the metaverse, whatever that may be. Is your ENS name expiring soon? Oh, well, you gotta go fix that. Like, oh, is your vault about to be liquidated? Ooh, you should go fix that. But Ryan, like, I know, because you're, you know, a normal person. Well, actually, you're an AI. But the first thing you do, I bet, when you wake up in the morning, is you check your phone. Yeah. And if you want events that are going on in crypto to show up on your phone, you need Push. Whether you are a consumer of those notifications or you are actually an application pushing these notifications out to your users, either way, you need Push. There is a link in the show notes to go get started getting notified about events in the metaverse.
That's really cool. I mean, Earnify gives you the ability to get notified for airdrop opportunities you might be eligible for.
Wow,
that's just
Ryan,
one of them.
Ryan is leaking some alpha here.
you could just sign up for all of these. Anyway, opt into these. There's a link in the show notes. All right, David, what should people look out for in this episode? I know this is partially a story about product market fit and crypto, but I also feel like there's a layer two story behind So Rare. What are some of the things people should be on the lookout for?
Yeah, so I want to ask Nicholas about just the usability in UX. And how, like, in the world, if you go onto Reddit right now and you go like, I like NFTs, you get 10,000 downvotes. So I want to learn about like how the word NFT in crypto has been accepted by this community that is seemingly outside of the crypto community. How far outside the crypto community is it? And what is the secret sauce behind why product market fit has been seen at So Rare? And what lessons can we learn to apply that to other fields? So like there's one part a layer two conversation, there's one part an NFT conversation, there's one part a gamification part, because that is what So Rare is. It is fantasy. It's a fantasy game built on top of actual real sports. And so how did all of these things come together, and how can we leverage the secret sauce to apply to other projects out in the crypto space? So that's the thing to pay attention to.
Definitely a lot of lessons for us here, guys. We'll be right back with Nicholas Julia, who is the co-founder and CEO of So Rare. But before we do, we want to thank the sponsors that made this episode possible.
Arbitrum One is pioneering the world of secure Ethereum scalability and is continuing to accelerate the Web3 landscape. Hundreds of projects have already deployed on Arbitrum One, producing flourishing DeFi and NFT ecosystems. With the recent addition of Arbitrum Nova, gaming and social dApps like Reddit are also now calling Arbitrum home. Both Arbitrum One and Nova leverage the security and decentralization of Ethereum and provide a builder experience that's intuitive, familiar, and fully EVM compatible. On Arbitrum, both builders and users will experience faster transaction speeds with significantly lower gas fees. With Arbitrum's recent migration to Arbitrum Nitro, it's also now 10 times faster than before. Visit arbitrum.io, where you can join the community, dive into the developer docs, bridge your assets, and start building your first dApp. With Arbitrum, experience Web3 development the way it was meant to be. Secure, fast, cheap, and friction-free. The Brave Wallet is your secure multi-chain on-ramp into Web3, and it's built directly into the Brave privacy browser. Gone are the days of managing multiple wallet extensions that put you at risk of phishing, spoofs, and tracking. With the Brave Wallet, you can securely manage your crypto assets across more than 100 different chains, including Ethereum, Layer 2s, Solana, and more, all without downloading risky extensions. The Brave Wallet is easy to set up and removes the headache of jumping between wallets and extensions. It's lightweight, but packed with great features, like built-in token swaps, buying and holding NFTs with a gallery view, and support for hardware wallets. But also much more than that, because Brave is shipping new features every single month, with a mission to make Web3 easier to navigate for its over 55 million users. Wallet extensions are a thing of the past, so get started with Brave's Web3-ready browser today and experience a decentralized web seamlessly without all the clutter. You can download the browser at brave.com/bankless and click the wallet icon to get started. If you've been listening to Bankless, you know that we're fans of the modular blockchain thesis. The idea that blockchains will separate execution from data availability and consensus, allowing all three to become the best versions of themselves. And Fuel has built the fastest modular execution layer in the industry. By supporting parallel transaction execution, Fuel unlocks significantly faster throughput for the Web3 world. Fuel also goes beyond the limitations of the EVM with its own Fuel VM, which is more efficient and optimized, opening up the design space for developers. And lastly, Fuel brings a powerful developer experience with its own domain-specific language, Sway, and a supportive toolchain called Fork. With Fuel, you can have the benefits of smart contract languages like Solidity while adopting the improvements made by the Rust tooling ecosystem, letting the Fuel development environment go beyond the limitations of the EVM. If you want to learn more, there's a link in the show notes to see how you can get involved with the Fuel network.
All right, guys, we are back with Nicholas Julia. He's the co-founder and CEO of So Rare. They are building the next generation of sports games where fans can play with skin in the game. This is a mix of fantasy sports and also NFT collectibles, sort of tokenized cards that you can actually own. Nicholas, welcome to Bankless. How you doing, man?
Thank you. Thank you, Ryan, for having me. Very excited to have this chat with you today.
Oh, me too. Do you know, it was you tweeted this out right before, and this was a memory. I'd forgotten this email right before we started. This is an email that you sent me, I think, like, is it 4 years ago now?
Yeah, four years ago. It was in 18, I think.
And this is when you first started getting into NFTs. This was an email you sent me. You said, hey, Ryan, I just read your tweet storm about NFTs. This was back in 2018, and I guess I was tweeting about NFTs. Yeah. We're just kind of conceptualizing them, I feel like, as an industry. And you said you're excited about it at the debate to determine which underlying protocol is going to win the NFT war.
Oh, I remember this era of crypto where we thought a single protocol would win the NFT war, huh?
Yeah. And then you said you're fully dedicated to crypto. You had some ideas on it. And how far you and So Rare have come since then. Can you just take us through the last 4 years of what you've built and what So Rare has accomplished, maybe some of the stats, and take us from this conversation all the way to So Rare today?
No, of course. I mean, when I was, you know, like starting to look at NFTs, so early 18, end of 17, early 18, I was fascinated by the fact that they're going to bring digital property to the web. And, you know, I was keep on digging, and I was looking at this cool feature, which is digital scarcity and what it could bring to collectors. And you know, human beings have been collecting in the physical space for centuries. And I was convinced that this behavior is going to apply to the web. I'm a massive sports fan, so I was dreaming to bring all these athletes and teams and leagues on top of it, and you know, like develop officially licensed NFT cards representing the players, the teams that we love. And look, I was convinced that just this would be 10 times bigger than physical collecting, because it's you know, you have provable scarcity through ownership. It's easier to trade. It's easier to show to your community. There's many, many reasons why I was thinking about that. But I was also thinking that for that to be huge, really mainstream, and reach hundreds of millions of fans across the globe, we would need to bring a usage value that is beyond collecting, right? So that's where the fantasy game or the game pillar is coming from, having a way, a cool way for fans every day, every week to engage with the card. So we got started at this intersection of, you know, this emerging technology, NFTs, official partnerships with the top IP in the world of sports, and then gaming. So got started with soccer, as you said, you know, now we have like more than 2 million users and close to
2 million users.
Yeah, 500,000 active on a monthly basis.
Wow.
So that's that has been a strong start, I would say.
Yeah,
can I
ask, by the way, because are they still active? Like, have they felt this like bear market at all, your user base? So how does that look these days versus like a year ago when the crypto market was booming?
No, I think that if you look even at Crypto Slam or any NFT tracker, right, you would find that you know, at before the bear market, we were like, in terms of sales volume, like we were somewhere between the 15th and 20th position, with all the profile pick NFTs being, you know, topping this this list. I think if you look at the last week, if we are not at the top, so that's today. I think that we are looking, if you got the top, you can a bit above that. If you look at 7 days, we are the top, and I think that speaks to the fact that we kept on growing during this bear market. If you look at all the metrics, like new users, sales, and so on, so I think that's encouraging, that speaks to the fact that when you do something beyond collecting, beyond trading, I think you are more resilient, because people have fun, people express their passion, their identity as sports fans, and they, you know, they keep on using and playing with the coins, despite the fact that the markets are going down.
So I just want, for folks that are listening to this, maybe can't see, we are on a website called Crypto Slam that is tracking NFT collections by various metrics in terms of sales, in terms of transactions. And this is so rare on a 7 week or 7 day period of time, leading the pack in terms of sales. Sales volume, 9 million in sales volume.
But also completely dominated on unique number of transactions, coming in at 154,000 transactions over the last 7 days, in comparison to Bored Apes coming in at 78.
Yeah.
Gods Unchained also kind of in a similar category versus a collectible, I would say a similar category versus So Rare, 177,000 transactions, and then down to CryptoPunks where you see 44. So you can really see the division of the categories here.
I think like one important point here is that this is only tracking our secondary transactions, and so that there's a significant volume of transactions and sales that is coming from the primary market, the coins that we sell for the first time as well. And that's also only tracking the paying users that are engaging with NFTs. But we have a significant number of users that are engaging with the free to play game and engaging with the fantasy this way.
What I think is really neat here is because SoRare has not suffered a decline in the way that Bored Apes has, or even CryptoPunks have, because this is sort of a real world fan base that is not as tied to like crypto speculative markets. And so we talk so often about in crypto about real world use cases, you know, that like normies would actually use. Well, this is one of them, guys. Like, people who are into sports, which is basically everyone that you know, like, you know, is into some sport, right? All of the normal people that you know.
Except David for your favorite podcast co-hosts.
Well, but you know what? It's the only reason David and I, like, David used to be, who'd you say? Like, you're a big sports fan. Like,
oh, yeah. Mariners, been 1999 to 2001, 2002. Yeah, big time.
I
did.
So I grew up in Canada in the Toronto area. Huge Toronto Maple Leafs fan. I used to follow it, like my entire childhood up until, like, you know, I was out of college and such. And I just haven't had time lately because, like, crypto has kind of dominated my life. So anyway, tons of sports fans, real world use case. And it does well even when crypto prices are down. This is quite a testament. And look at those transactions, right? We'll have other questions about how are you actually scaling this? But I just want folks to see kind of the volume and the level that's going on in the NFT world. And all of this is happening kind of behind the scenes quietly.
Yeah.
And Nicholas, I want to parse out two or three things that I think that you definitely noticed very, very early. Things like that you picked out earlier than most other people. And that was NFTs. In 2018, NFTs were a theory, not practice. But also scale. And I'm pretty sure SoRare started off understanding that, yo, the Ethereum layer one's not going to do it for us. And then also extra crypto communities. And so you kind of slammed these three particles together. NFTs, a community that's outside of crypto, call it the sports world, the sports community, and NFTs. And maybe there are some other things as well, but I really think that's what some of the secret sauce is behind SoRare's success, is that it identified these three things and the potential here way ahead of schedule back in 2018, 2019. What about those three things were obvious to you? Like, what did it feel obvious at the time, or just can you go through the thought process as to kind of how you put all these things together?
Yeah, I think from the very first day, I was like, because I remember in 17, 18, like the very small NFT community was, there was a debate whether we should, you know, like simplify the user experience or keep this clunky experience of, you know, like setting up a wallet and like this, I don't know, between 15 and 20 steps before you can buy a CryptoPunk, right? And so part of the community was thinking this is education, like when the users need to go through it, it's a feature, not a bug, all of that. And I was like, no, I think you know, if we want to really like reach like millions, dozens of millions of users, we need to abstract the complexity and deliver the benefits of NFT collectibles to the mainstream. And so so the benefits for us in our case are like the digital scarcity, so the collectability, the true ownership, the fact that you can, you know, sell your card freely, the fact that you can move it to other games and outside of the platform, and so on. And so fans need to feel it, you know, and not go, you know, through different steps or to Q&A to understand this. Like they need to feel it through design, through the user experience, through copywriting, whatever, but really feel it, right? So that has been like very important in the way we architected and built the product. And then like our conviction was baked in the fact that we are answering like human needs that are like very, very deep, right? Like expressing who you are, your identity for a sports fan, like it's collecting plays a big role, and NFTs are enabling digital collecting, right? So we were like into this track. We were also into the track of like you know, like kind of uniting sports fans or enabling fans to connect, and obviously connecting is also something that is very important for us as human beings, and so enabling these fans to play against each other with the bragging rights that come with it, to meet more people also was something that was very, very important to us. So we were like very convinced about like the huge potential at this intersection of collecting and playing with your friends, basically. And for us, NFTs just happened to be the perfect technology to unlock this potential. You know, the market fit was such obvious that we haven't, you know, like made any paid marketing so far. Like we haven't spent money on marketing, so everything that happened so far has been organic, like with the referral program and so on, around the World Cup. So in a couple of weeks, we're going to do our first marketing campaign, actually. So we're going to start, you know, putting the brand out there in the US, notably, where I think there's tremendous potential for us. And so now I believe that the product is getting closer, you know, to the state I want it to be in, to start like spreading the word. There's still like some steps to remove the frictions that I like us to do, but we are getting closer to show this product to big audiences.
So for the Bankless listeners that aren't actually familiar what SoRare actually is, what you do with these NFTs, it's kind of like it's a fantasy game where you have these NFTs that represent real players, football players, that's soccer for the American people, baseball players, basketball players, kind of like a baseball card, kind of like a basketball card. And then there's points that if the player in real life, in a real game, does something in their game, that would score points for people that have these cards, that have selected these cards to be in that fantasy game for that week or something. And so the idea is you collect the cards, they have a real link with a real player, that player scores points in the real life, the points are scored in the fantasy game, and you can only get those points if you have the card that associates with the player. Nicholas, how much overlap is there between crypto people like me and Ryan, who don't know who Rafael Federer Nadal is or whatever, the tennis players, and the people that are on SoRare? Like, to what degree are these crypto people, or are these just mainly like sports players? How much overlap is there between these two communities?
So yeah, we, you know, like as for any like consumer product that aims to reach like very, very big audiences, like you start with an early community of early adopters. So for us, it was crypto enthusiasts with an interest of sports, and even NFT enthusiasts in the early days with an interest in sports. So let me tell you, it was very, like a couple of hundreds and a couple of thousand people, like very limited segments. And then like we grew to people, with an interest in sports and spending money in games where they could have like skin in the game, right? And now we are extending to a new user segment, so people playing fantasy sports, free-to-play fantasy sports notably, and also collecting in the physical world. So we are moving from segment to segment and evolving the product to cater to this new segments, and right now most of the users that are jumping in, they don't even know that there's a blockchain behind, and it's an NFT, all of that. They don't know about that, right? So they understand the benefits, they get it, and at some point in their journey they understand what it is, and most of the time it changed their mind, by the way, about NFTs, because the perception of NFTs in sports right now in Europe in particular is not that good, right? Like, because during the bull market we've seen so many cash grabs and so on, that it kind of undermine the perception of the fans, and hopefully we are trying to do things the right way here, and build the best product for the fans. And I think the way the product works, as you put it very, very well, like it's a mix between collecting and playing fantasy. So you would collect NFT cards representing the players that you love, some people just engage with that part, right, like just collecting, and others then they are composing a team with these players and engaging with the fantasy game where they can progress and win rewards. Those are really the two pillars. Put it another way, I would present it as collecting on steroids, like the owning this officially licensed NFTs open a new world of things that you can do. So engaging with the fantasy game and winning rewards, but also accessing physical experiences. So we were starting to reiterate on, okay, you own this NFT, you can go to this game, you can meet this player, you can access this training ground. So all these things that we are doing in collaboration collaboration with our partners, all the top, sports league in the world, and athletes. Like we have Serena Williams as a board advisor, Kylian Mbappe as a investor and ambassador, and Rudy Gobert in the basketball world, and many others that we're gonna announce in the coming months. So this bridge between the digital and the physical is also something that we are very excited about.
And so what role does money play here? Because we're looking at Ryan's screen as he's navigating, and you can buy these cards. One card you can buy for $4.44. Another card you could buy for $213. Like when people hear NFTs, they kind of think, speculative asset collectibles that go up and down in price. What role does speculation play in owning some of these cards? And also, can you, as a player of so rare NBA, so rare MLB, so rare football, can you make money playing this game? Is that a core part of it, or is the money more of an afterthought?
Yeah, I think another way to think about the product is in the physical world, when you think about an NBA team, for instance, you have different roles that you can play. You could be a team owner, right? Making decisions on what players to buy. You can be a sport director trying to find the next star and scout for the next star. You can be a coach, thinking about what players to put on the court for the next game. And you can be a player, obviously. And I think what's amazing with this product, with Sora NBA, because we're talking about this, is that you can play all those roles. There's four roles, team owner, making decisions on what to buy, and being a sports director or scout, being a coach, being a player. You play all the roles. And so that's amazing. To get back to your question, I think that there's different motivations for different people. On the product, people engaging only with the collecting part, people engaging only with the trading part, people engaging only with the fantasy part. So there's all different motivations. Some people are making money by reselling a card like they would do in the physical world with Topps cards or Panini cards or any collectible, right? But at its core, it's a new way to engage with the passion, right? And to express who you are, to play with your friends, to meet your friends, and that's, I think, what's really exciting.
Nicholas, I'm just kind of scrolling through this this user interface here, and I think you said it early, is did I catch you right and a lot of users don't even know that they're using NFTs, basically, or that's not what's material to them, the NFT itself. What's impressing me most as I'm scanning through this interface is it doesn't feel like a blockchain. It feels very much like a Web 2 app. Yeah. And yet there are so many things that I'd recognize, the ability to kind of transfer fiat from MoonPay or Ramp, the ability to add ETH my wallet, and I can bid on each of these players, and I can bid directly from my credit card or in ETH, right? All of this feels so familiar to a crypto native, but also I the user experience here is there's a wallet behind the scenes here, but it's not clunky. It doesn't feel all of the crypto interfaces that I think crypto natives have experienced in the past. Can you talk a little bit about this? This had to be hard making this happen and smoothing out all of these rough edges. How did you get to this point?
Look, it has been first of all, as I said, it has been one of the key principles that I gave as a product direction to the team, abstracting all this complexity so that we can deliver the benefits to the fans. I think that's the first thing to say. I think we went through phases. I don't know if you remember Loom Network.
I remember. So I think I remember you pinging me. What's 2018, 2019? Yeah. You're like, hey, we're not sure how to scale this thing. I'm looking at Loom. Yeah. And at the time, this was Plasma Layer 2 was the promise. Yeah, tell me where that ended up.
Yeah, no, so long story short, it has been painful, right? Because we moved from Layer 1 to Layer 2 with Loom to Layer 1 again, because Loom disappeared at some point. And then again, moving up to Layer 2 with Starkware. But always with this goal to abstract the complexity and have something that is secure, that is scalable, obviously. So we went through different phases. Now we are happy with the outcome that we still have, you know, like some steps to go to really like reach the audiences we want to reach. Mobile is an issue, so we have good conversations, you know, with Google, with Apple, because right now you know the problem better than I do, but it's not possible to sell this digital collectibles on the App Store, and I've seen like recent news like terms on the App Store. You know, it's not really like NFT friendly right now. So there's still some, you know, some conversations to be had and some progress that we should all do for the space, I guess.
Yeah, seeing where this app has come just excites me so much, because I think you know, so many critics, particularly of crypto, but then in NFTs, they're always asking, oh, so where are the use cases? When is this going to go mainstream, right? And here's a perfect example of So Rare, which is scaled of real world use case. I mean, this is not using like Ponzi economics in order to scale.
Can you imagine?
It's just real demand from sports enthusiasts for recognizable real world assets. And they built it doing so within the kind of the constraints of crypto. But like smoothing out all of the rough edges from a UX perspective. And I know there's still work you want to do there, so you're probably seeing some of the imperfections, but I'm seeing like how far we have come. And like this being a use case that doesn't use Ponzi economics, smoothed out all of the rough edges, and it's actually like scaling on layer two. So these are real NFTs secured by Ethereum and settled at the base layer. That is pretty damn impressive. And honestly, I think that probably the So Rare team this use case doesn't get enough credit in crypto circles.
It's because it's sports. We're like, oh yeah, no, I forgot about sports.
I think that's part of it, and part of like we are you know, we're reaching a community that is very different from crypto Twitter, for instance. But I agree, Ren, with your point. When you look at crypto Twitter, like this, we are not really present there.
It's so great to see. And actually, this is probably going to be one of my favorite kind of real world use cases next time a skeptic's like, what do NFTs actually accomplish for people? One last question I have for you, and then we do need to break and come back. We got a lot more to cover. But how in the world did you get organizations like the NBA, the MLB, and some of the original football organizations in Europe to sign on to this project, get that licensing set up? Because that's another feat of magic. Wow, you actually got like licensing rights from some of these major organizations. And I guess as particularly the early ones, they took a bet on a startup doing this weird crypto NFT thing. How did that happen?
Yeah, I mean that has been like that has been very long, very long process with lots of education and effort, because you know you have seen probably like lots of partnerships between crypto companies and SponsX, and so you have this partnership category where you know you use sponsor teams and leagues to bring awareness to your crypto product. But what we are doing is different. We're going to have some marketing and we're going to start using it with the leagues and the teams. But at its core, it's licensing using the IP, meaning the players and the name of the teams and the league to sell products. So you have the IP on the products, and their IP is the biggest asset that they have. So they are very conservative. And what we've done in football, like bringing all these teams and leagues together, there's probably two companies that have done it in the last 60 years. Panini in the world of physical collecting, and Electronic Arts with the FIFA franchise, the video game, right? So it's not every year or even every decade that these organizations decide to partner with company like us and give their IP. So in order to get there, we our strategy has been to start small and prove the model. So we started with the Belgian league and then adding like little by little other leagues, other clubs, and proving that it was the future of sports gaming. It was working, it was a legitimate use case, and it was engaging sports fans in a sustainable way. Also proving them that we are building a world-class as consumer experience, right? And because they care so much about their IP, they care about the quality of the experience. And so this is something that we spend lots of effort also. And so then we moved to this place in football with, you know, millions of users and lots of engagement and huge sales volumes and so on. And so creating this new category, this new market, we were in the best position to convince then US leagues to jump in with us, like being the category creator. So they believe that we are the best place, the best position, sorry, to develop this category for them. Not only to be a new revenue stream, and they are interested in this, of course, but also help them to reach new audiences. So right now, like the MLB, the NBA, they are very excited about the potential that we have to grow the sport with them in Europe, in Asia, and in geographies where they want to develop outside of the US, basically, right? So it's very exciting because we're going to grow the pie for everyone. We're going to help the football, the soccer teams and leagues to grow in the US with the IP that we've acquired here. And the other way around, we're going to help US leagues to grow in other parts of the world with this vision that, you know, this is going to be the marketplace where you're going to be able to trade your LeBron James against your Kylian Mbappe or Lionel Messi, right? I think this is something that's very unique that we are doing. Well, you know, it's one product, right? And so with one wallet, with one account, you can play different games, different sports, and move across them. And I think that's pretty amazing.
So you want to collect all the sports then? NBA, yeah. MLB, soccer, football, that's kind of the start, but there are a few other sports to collect.
Yeah, there are more sports to collect. We're interested in all the top sports in the world with global audiences. Yes, we have two of the three major US sports. We have football with billions of fans across the globe. And that's a very nice start. And we are like laser focused on delivering for the three sports right now. But obviously, like we would look to expand at some point in the future. Yeah.
Amazing.
Nicholas, I think it's unquestionably that So Rare kind of knows what's up. As somebody that has taken a product into product market fit and now is in a post product market fit world, that makes you like one of the few, right? And so I want to pick your brain a little bit in the second half of the show about like just advice and perspective that we could give other people who are also still on this path of maybe they're working in NFTs, maybe they're working on mainstream apps. Just as somebody who's gone through the dark forest of building a product for non-crypto people and that product be successful, I just want to pick your brain a little bit about how any advice that you might have for the people still working towards that path. So all of those questions and more are coming up in the second half of the show right after we talk to some of these fantastic sponsors that make this show possible. Sequence is the all-in-one developer platform you need to build Web3 games and applications. For your users, Sequence is a smart wallet, and it's the easiest, most intuitive onboarding your users will ever experience, and comes with all the features users need to feel empowered in the Web3 world. Multi-chain support, NFT display, and users can buy SFTs, NFTs, and crypto directly with a credit or debit card. For developers, Sequence is the plug-and-play platform for Web3 games and apps. Their APIs let you bring NFTs, SFTs, and tokens into your game or application, and a Sequence relayer enables gasless transactions for your users. Sequence already powers some of the best Web3 games like Skyweaver, NFT projects like Cool Cats, and marketplaces like NiftySwap. And Sequence is compatible with all the EVM chains, including Ethereum, Polygon, Binance Smart Chain, Arbitrum, Optimism, and Avalanche. So go to sequence.xyz to get started unlocking the full potential of your application today. The reality today is that five corporations control the entire world of social media. They own our names, they restrict our content, they monitor our every move. And their time is up, thanks to our sponsor, DeSo. DeSo is a layer one blockchain built from the ground up to decentralize and scale social networks. With DeSo, you can own your own identity, content, and social graph, and take it with you across hundreds of applications already built on the censorship-resistant DeSo blockchain. DeSo's storage advantages make it finally possible to build infinite state applications that can efficiently store and index large amounts of content and data fully on-chain. DeSo also offers multiple crypto-native monetization primitives for developers and creators, including social NFTs, social DAOs, social tokens, and social tipping. So in order to experience the social layer of Web3, go to DeSo.com and claim your username. That's DeSo.com.
TruFi is DeFi's largest credit protocol, connecting global lenders with institutional-grade lending opportunities. TruFi has completed over $1.7 billion in originations and paid out nearly $35 million to lenders, proving that DeFi is ready to take its next big leap into the $8 trillion credit market. TruFi gives lenders like you access to sustainable, high-yield opportunities backed by real-world investments, usually reserved for high-net-worth individuals. At the same time, fund managers use TruFi's financial infrastructure to bring their portfolio on-chain, benefiting from the global liquidity, cost savings, and transparency of DeFi. TruFi is a decentralized financial utility. The protocol is owned and governed by the TruFi DAO, and TruFi is here to bring DeFi into the golden age, bridging the power and access of crypto with institutional-grade lending opportunities and portfolio tooling. Explore the diverse financial opportunities available on TruFi or launch your own portfolio at TruFi.io.
And we're back with Nicholas from So Rare. Nicholas, like I was saying before the sponsors, I want to pick your brain a little bit and just like give some advice to the Bankless Nation. But first, what's next for So Rare? What's on the horizon? It's a bear market now. So what are you guys doing during the bear market? And overall, can you just like kind of tease like what's next on the frontiers of So Rare?
No, look, you know, it's going to be interesting because during the bull market, we have been quite quiet on marketing, as I was saying earlier, and we're gonna start, you know, around the World Cup, notably in a couple of weeks, marketing aggressively the product, and I'm very excited to see those results. So the World Cup in itself is the biggest sport event in the world, right? So there's going to be lots of attention.
That's bigger than the Super Bowl for all of you Americans. Like, it's a lot bigger than the Super Bowl, right?
A lot bigger, I think. Yeah, exactly.
So you're gonna start marketing. Like, So Rare has not gone and started marketing. You're gonna start marketing at the World Cup of football, soccer.
That's correct.
The globe's most viewed sports event. That's when you're going to start.
That's correct. So it's coming. So no, I'm very excited. It's going to be our first brand campaign. So we have lots of initiative around that. So I'm very excited by that. So it's not only marketing, it's also product evolutions to cater to broader audiences. So I cannot reveal everything. It's going to come in coming days, but social features, collectible features, you know, right now our product is really around fantasy. We have lots to do to improve the collectibility of these cards and to improve the social features of the product. And so we have like a couple of amazing launches that are lined up for the World Cup in the coming weeks. So I think that's number one in what's next. Obviously, number two is growing aggressively our US sports that we've just launched. So we are very excited. Like, the early results are amazing, and there's much more we can do for them. So we're gonna keep on growing those products and listening to the community and improving the product every week, as we've done with Soccer in the early days. So I think that's number two, and number three is keep on growing the team, right? Like, it's 160 people right now, split between Paris and New York, and we brought amazing people, like people leading design at Spotify, engineering at Snap. Like, we have really like amazing leaders, with us right now, people that have seen scale with Web2 companies, right, and that are bringing this knowledge to us. And I want to stay true to our crypto DNA, but at the same time benefit from people that have seen scale in the previous wave of tech companies, and this is something I'm very excited, and spend a lot of time hiring the best talents onboarding them, and that's something I'm very excited about as well.
So Nicholas, this is so cool, and I feel like there's an element to you which I really like, is that is just very understated for the amount of progress that you guys have made. Like, it's just absolutely incredible. So we're at 1.5 million or so users of So Rare today, and I was wondering, and this is before you've actually turned on kind of the marketing engine.
That's
before
crazy.
You've done That's World crazy. Cup, before you've done all of these things. Can you give us a sense for the total addressable market for sports fans? Like, so
how big is sports?
Well, let's say, like, I mean, like, the World Cup alone, I mean, how many football fans do we have? And I'm talking about European football when I say football, right? And so like, what is like, do you see a world where maybe 10% of the sports communities are kind of actively have some sort of, you know, so rare type of collectible? And what kind of numbers are we seeing?
Yeah,
you guys are maximally successful here.
No, I think it's an interesting question. So like football fans, there's billions of football fans. So then it depends on, you know, like what's really a fan, and like, are we chatting someone, engaging like, you know, like once a month, a week, a year, but there's billions of people in the world who declare interest for football and declare themselves as fans. I think that when you think about the most popular games in the world of soccer, we are talking a couple dozen million people that are engaging with the product. My aim is that we reach hundreds of millions of people with this product, and I'm going to tell you why I'm very convinced that we are going to do this. The first reason is that it's much easier to engage with this game than a video game. You don't have to buy a PlayStation and to install a game and to learn like how to play the game, all of that. It's much easier, right? Like,
it's a casual game.
Yeah, it's casual. You buy a card, you compose your team, like even, you know, you can engage, you know, within 30 seconds, you can get the basics, right? So I think that's reason number one, is easy to access, easier to understand. Number two is that we are tapping into something that, like, we are tapping into like behaviors that are existing, right? Like this need to collect and express your identity, this need to connect and socialize with people, this need to have fun and to connect with your passion. So we are tapping into these existing behaviors, but with this amazing thing, which is owning your game, right? Like owning your assets and be with the, you know, the freedom to do whatever you want with it. And you know, when people get it, like when people understand that they truly own part of the game, it's crazy. They understand that, yes, you know, I can resell this item. Yes, I can move this item into a side game. Yes, I can reuse this item for the next first season, as opposed to being forced to buy again something that I don't own, right? So it's really like a shift from a world where people were buying stuff, and you know, in video games there are close to $100 billion spent every single year you know, from fans buying stuff that they are not owning and that they are forced to buy again next year, right? So and so when you move from here to a world where you give control back to your fans, to your community, where they truly own it, they can keep it, and so on, when this is going to reach, you know, broad audiences, this is going to be crazy. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so speaking of broad audiences, Ryan, I've got the 2018 FIFA World Cup numbers in front of me. And the reason why, Ryan, you might not know this, Ryan, but I do know this, is that the FIFA World Cup only happens every 4 years. So the last one.
I didn't know that, David.
Okay,
I didn't
right. know that. We know, so we got some sports stuff here. So the last FIFA World Cup, 2018, 3.5 billion people watched at least 1 minute.
Are you kidding me?
1 minute. That is half of the globe watched at least 1 minute of the 2018 FIFA World Cup. And it's estimated that the full game was watched by 1.1 billion people, viewers worldwide.
That is a yeah. That
talking about
blows
exposure.
Me away.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
That's like everyone who
every
has the
other
capability
person
to watch.
Saw the World Cup on a screen for at least a glimpse during 2018.
And so yeah, I'm looking at this upcoming World Cup, and so Gianni Infantino, who's leading FIFA, is projecting 5 billion. So he's leading
oh
FIFA.
My
so,
God.
So 5 billion people. When have you ever heard of a metric like that?
Yeah, that's I mean, how many multiples of the total number of crypto users is that?
Well, all of them. So
here's my question. So you're saying when you have numbers like 3.5 billion and 5 billion and you're saying you think that So Rare could get to you hundreds of million of users. Guys, what that means, Bankless listeners, is we're talking about an onboarding mechanism to crypto wallets for things priced in fiat but also priced in ETH, mm-hmm. to hundreds of millions of people
All of those cards that were on sale were denominated in ETH that we saw on your screen. Yeah.
This is a crypto onboarding mechanism, and it blows my mind. If just to all of the MetaMask users right now, 30 million or so. That's what they have in terms of like, I think like monthly actives, 30 million, right? And we're talking about one single app being able to potentially onboard hundreds of millions. Okay, so my next question here, Nicholas, is can we handle that kind of scale right now?
Like, yeah, you're going to break Ethereum. Like,
are we going to go crypto kitty it, or do you have a way to like make this thing scale?
Look, my co-founder and CTO would be better placed to answer this one. I think from the latest I've heard that he's very confident. Obviously, the numbers we're discussing right now, it's going to be like it's going to be phases, right? Like we are very confident for the next phase of growth. Moving from millions to dozens of millions, we are very confident about this. Just to touch on what you were saying before, like this on-ramp for mainstream people, mainstream fans into the Web3 world, I think this is something that is important to me as a founder, right? And so when I was starting this company, I was thinking about NFTs as a way to educate people at some point and to put digital assets in their hands, and at some point they could also like look at other cryptocurrencies and so on. Obviously, they share lots of properties with cryptocurrencies, true ownership, portability, all of that. And I think this is something I'm very excited about. I think it could be like huge for the space in general.
So Nicholas, there's so many reasons. I mean, in hindsight, it makes sense. Sports, billion person fan base. I really liked what you said about you're tapping into behaviors that people already know. Fantasy games, collecting, sports, money, like throwing it all into a single app. And again, in hindsight, it seems to make sense why SoRare has done what it's done. What do you have any generalizable lessons for other people, NFT builders, DeFi app builders? Like, what lessons have you learned that are perhaps less SoRare specific and more timeless and universal that we can all, anything just really stand out to you? Like, what life advice do you have to give us as crypto people?
No, yeah, I think what we've done in terms of testing, iterating, is that like we a couple of values or principles. Listen to your core community on a weekly basis, prioritize and move fast to improve the product and ship what they want. I think the velocity is really key to make your product evolve, and more importantly to learn what's working, what's not working, right? It's better to have something that is shipped than something that may be better in a couple of weeks, right? So I think that's something that has been very, very important for us. Probably another one has been to focus on the right metric and to be very deliberate about what you are optimizing for a very, very long time. We've never, and it's still the case actually, we are not optimizing for revenue, for instance, right? We are we are lucky to have been profitable since the very early days. We raised $680 million Series B, but since the very early days we were focusing on how do we retain the users, how do we engage the users, and this kind of metrics were really driving our efforts more than short-term things that are maybe pleasing the investors, our bond short-term, but are hurting the company longer-term. One example that I want to give, we could have done an ICO and have our own token or whatever, but that was not aligned with these goals of, delighting the users, retaining the users, all of that. And I was thinking that could haunt us in our way to reach hundreds of millions of users. And so because of, all the risks that we all know about this. And so, that's another important lesson, I think.
Well, I have been observing Nicolas Sobert from afar from those last
four years.
Yeah, I would have loved to have been closer retrospectively, but like I can't say enough about what you guys have built, and something I think that the crypto community can take away from what you just said is you guys didn't take any shortcuts. You just built a fantastic product for your community. You had a vision and you executed. Execution. This is the common denominator that we see in successful crypto projects that are able to last from cycle to cycle. And congrats to you guys for doing it. Nicolas, thank you so much for joining us. I have one last question for you. And this is a question related to the NFT market. I don't know if you kind of dabble or look in kind of the wider crypto NFT market, or if you're just so heads down focused on what SoRare is doing, kind of the fantasy sports in the sports team that you haven't looked. But what do you think of the current NFT market in crypto? You know, the Bored Apes, the CryptoPunks, all of the gaming NFTs, all of the stuff that's going on. Do you have any thoughts on it? Are there any projects that you really like? Do you have any wisdom to leave us with?
No, look, I think during this bull market, we've seen lots of projects that were focused on extracting value on the short term, and that that definitely hurts the overall space. I think that that there's lots of builders out there with a long term vision. I'm sure we like lots of you have seen like what Reddit has been doing with the digital collectibles, as they call it, recently. I think that's a good way to again show the benefits of owning an NFT without having to explain or educate or users just feed it, right? And I think that those are the projects that I'm really excited about. And I think for us usage value and building a game has been a key to our success, and I think that's amazing because then you retain users and you bring them every week and so on. But I also think that there's amazing use cases just around collecting and art and all of that, and so I hope to see more of them as well, and I hope to keep on seeing more and more artists developing their audiences and diversifying the way they make a living, right? So yes, that's I don't have any specifics. I don't spend the time I would love to spend looking at new projects, but I think what I see is that there's lots of build-ons in gaming in particular, world-class people coming from the video game industry notably that are quietly building the future of this space. It takes time because building a good game takes time, but it's coming.
Absolutely, it is coming. All boats rise together. Nicolas, keep building, man. It's great to have you.
Thank you so much.
Risks and disclaimers, guys. As always, gotta mention, none of this has been financial advice. Hasn't been sports advice either. David and I are not in a position to give either of those two things. Never do. ETH is risky.
Financial advice.
So are NFTs. So is crypto. All of DeFi is, you could definitely lose what you put in, but at least you can own it. At least you can own your own collectibles. We're headed west. This is the frontier. It's not for everyone, but we're glad you're with us on the Bankless journey. Thanks a lot.